Welcome back to the Macam in the Middle podcast after another Sunderland game, this time on a Friday night away to Sheffield Wednesday. A nice 3-0 win. And as always, we'll get into what happened during the game, team selections, and then a brief look ahead to the next fixture, which I think is Watford at home on Wednesday. Like I said, it was a Friday night game, that Mike Land. I've been trying to actually look for the stats about this, but Sunderland always seem to win on a Friday night. And that statement's probably going to go out the window because I'm only going to be able to name two. Obviously, Birmingham last season, obviously Sheffield Wednesday this season. But going back for years now, I'm sure someone will be able to find the stats. I think Sunderland have won most, if not every, Friday night game in recent history. So always a good omen. Sheffield Wednesday, obviously a lot going on off the pitch, especially. Not a lot going on the pitch. Obviously, they get promoted last season through the playoffs. And I think they've had 2 points all season so far to date. So going into this game, it was a game that Sunderland had to win, and we did.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I think if you look at the aspirations of the two clubs, I mean, Sheffield Wednesday, I'll very quickly touch on them actually. Their owner's a disgrace, and I think we can all agree that I think the statement he put out was an absolute joke. And I think I've got a lot of time for Sheffield Wednesday after the way that they conducted themselves after we beat them in the playoffs. With the humility and graciousness they showed, which was just on a different level to what I've ever expected. So yeah, fingers crossed for them, they deserve better. Hopefully they manage to stay up. But for the context of this game, as we're the opposition, yes, I absolutely, from our perspective, we had to win the game. And I mean, if you look at the two clubs' aspirations, as I alluded to before, their aspiration is pretty much to stay in the league, whereas ours,
I don't think this is too harsh to say. I think their aspiration is to somehow better Rotherham's lowest point record of 18.
Well, I mean, to be fair, based on the first few games, I mean, I thought Rotherham were the worst team I'd seen us play this season. And then Sheffield Wednesday, I think, just looked 10 times worse than what they did. And I think it was because, I think you probably agree with this, when we went 2-0 up, you could just sense in the Sheff Wed players' body language that they're gone. The confidence is gone, the enthusiasm's gone, the energy's gone. The crowd seems to have turned both on the manager and on the ownership. And it was, and it could either have gone one of two ways this game. So Sheff Wed's aspiration is to avoid relegation if they can, despite their owner or Darren Moore, maybe when he left, suggest implications they wanted top six. Not sure where they ever got that from, but you know, and then ours is to at least finish in the top six, maybe better than that. So, I mean, it could have gone one or two ways on Friday night, couldn't it? It either could have galvanized them to say, come on then, Friday night at Hillsborough, under the lights, got the home crowd behind us, let's go for it. And historically in the past, it's a game that Sunderland always tend to lose when a team hasn't won yet. But, or they could have gone the other way, which thankfully it did, which is that we went 2-0 up in the first 10 minutes and the atmosphere just, I don't know, I wouldn't say it turned, but it was basic, it felt very flat. Even just watching it on the TV, because I didn't go down, but on the TV, it looked very, very flat. It just looked like devoid of any energy. And I think, to be fair to Sunderland, they took full advantage of that. And it's not an environment we've usually succeeded at before. And it's usually the other way around, isn't it? When our atmosphere isn't great, in terms of toxicity, then none of the team basically frustrates us, turns us against the players and keeps us quiet. So it was nice for once to do that to somebody else, albeit I do feel for their fans.
Yeah. And obviously, as it's, like I said, 2 points from nine games from them. If you average that out over a season, if they were to keep on going, would finish on 10, which would be 8 points lower than any team has ever recorded in the Championship. And like I said, this is a game going into that Sunderland had to win. Everyone's expecting Sunderland to win. But like you briefly alluded to, this is a game that probably scares more Sunderland fans because...
It scared me, for sure. Scared me going into it.
And obviously, we'll get into the game, what happened. Obviously, this did happen, but it's one of them games where the first goal obviously doesn't decide the game. That's not how football works. But the first goal is... especially in a game like this, is the most important, because if Sheffield Wednesday do get that first goal, then, you know, they're probably quite happy to sit back a little bit deeper, you know, throw-ins take an extra little bit longer. But for Sunderland to get that goal as early as we did, it means we don't give them the chance to do any of that.
Exactly. And that's one of the things I was saying to my friends in the pub before we ended up starting to watch the game, which is that if you concede the first goal, and it was a bit similar to QPR in some ways. I know QPR was aided by the fact they went down to 10 men, but point is, in those type of games, if you go 1-0 down, then the opposition have more reason to sit in behind the ball and make it very tough for us to break down. And the more that happens, the more we make a mistake, and the greater chance it is that they increase their lead, which then makes us more frustrated. And it's a cycle that goes on, and it basically would have ended, if not in defeat for Sunderland, then certainly not in a win, that's for sure. And it wouldn't have been very... And from this game, I think we all agreed that nothing less than winning and beating Sheffield Wednesday would have been good enough. And thankfully, obviously, we have won the game. But because we got the first goal, and I keep saying I don't mean to segue, but it's not going to sound like it. But once we got the first goal, that was then crucial to lead to the second one, because the second goal, it basically, we won it in our own half, or in our own third, probably. Burstow gets a good long ball over the top, and because Chef Wed have no choice but to come at us, Jack Clark does the rest from there. But to get back to your main point, yes, the first goal was absolutely massive, and I think to get it as early as we did was huge. I think that's the earliest we've scored away from home. It definitely is this season, but it's the earliest we've scored away from home for some time.
It is, and not only is it the earliest we've scored away from home, but I think it's one of the, well, if not the only, corner we've scored from directly. And
yeah,
I think we talked about this literally at the Cardiff game, but I can't remember any this season. I could be wrong. We could both be wrong. I'm not sure. But what we do know is this one was direct from a corner. And, it, you know, not many people talk about it, but the way that we actually win the corner in the first place comes from Sheffield Wednesday actually having possession, because they have the ball at the back. Sunderland press high, and that's what, you know, Sunderland do well, is they press high, they win the ball back, they get the free kick. Pritchard probably should do better with the free kick, goes out for a corner, and Dan Ballard, I think that's 2 goals in 3 games now, you know, shows that we can be a threat from set pieces if the delivery is right.
Well, exactly. I mean, one of the quotes that I've always said before is I think we feels like we are the worst team in the EFL when it comes to set pieces in terms of attacking them, because we never, either the corners hit the first man, or if they don't hit the first man, then they always end up on the head of the opposition, so they can head it out with comfortable ease. But this one, I mean, to quickly touch on it, from a Sheffield Wednesday point of view, if you watch Dan Ballard's run before he scores, it's basically a free run across the box, isn't it? And it's one where if we let someone do that in the box, I'd be furious at that. But Dan Ballard, to be fair, he anticipated where the ball was going to drop, the area it was going to drop into, and then leaped to... use a quote before, leap like a salmon in the air, and basically heads it into the goal. So it's one where it's good for us to finally get that monkey off our back and actually score from a set piece. And as you're right, if the delivery is correct, we've got height. We've got Burstow's tall, Bellingham's reasonably tall, Ballard's tall. Samir's tall if he comes off the bench. We've got players with height. So it's just a matter of, and even Luke O'Neill is not as much as not the tallest, he can certainly jump for a header. So if you can get the delivery right and aim it in the right area, then, especially if a team's doing zonal marking as well, because then it means that you've got space to run into because players aren't following their men so much. I don't know about you as well, but when the ball was headed into the back of the net, I felt like it took about 3-4 seconds to realise it was a goal, because it feels like the header...
I mean, obviously, I was there, and obviously we're at the opposite side of the ground, and because you're looking at it straight on, the ball looked like it had just gone up as opposed to in. So I think it was, it was about 3 or 4 seconds until you realised it was actually in.
It felt like slow motion, didn't it? It felt like real slow motion where the ball just kind of bounces off another head. I think it was up into the air, and then it sort of just gently and slowly loops into the back of the net. Goal's a goal, obviously, but I don't know. It was just a funny thing to point out that it felt like it took ages to hit the back of the net.
And that wasn't the only early goal we scored, because not long after we do make it 2-0, and if the first goal was important, the second goal, in this case, probably does kill the game off, albeit how early it was. You know, good player from Sunderland. It was Job who got the credit for the pass, albeit it was actually Burstow that made it. Pritchard wins it back. Burstow switches it over to Clark. And, you know, for a team that have played against Clark a couple of times, obviously last season, but the season in League One, and for a team that have probably done the homework on how he plays, to seem to give him a lot of space. And if you give Clark a lot of space, especially this season in the form that he seems to be in, he's going to punish you. And that's exactly what he did. He cuts inside. It's a good finish. And he makes it 2-0. And I'd say that, given the circumstances, given the way Sheffield Wednesday have been playing, and the kind of attitude that the fans have at the minute towards specifically the owner, it's an important goal, and, you know, it is the winning goal, realistically.
Well, Well, it is, because it takes the wind out of their sails, doesn't it? Because at 1-0, all it takes is a daft mistake from our perspective, and then Sheffield Wednesday are back in the game 1-1, and then all of a sudden Hillsborough's, everyone's tails are up, aren't they? So this one is crucial, that I think, to get it as, again, to go 2-0 up as early as we did, as I mentioned before. It's one where it just kills the mood completely and it plays right into our hands. I mean, as you said, I mean, obviously, look, Chef Wed obviously gave Clark loads of space. But as mentioned before, because we got the first goal, they had to come at us. And with all due respect, their forward quality for this level doesn't seem to be too good. So because of that, it means we can counter on them with quick and easy transitions. And then it means that Jack Clark has got all the time in the world to aim, to angle a shot and to aim it. And not to mention as well, other people have said this before, if you're that good at what you do, it doesn't matter how maybe one-footed he is or how predictable he is that good, that damn good at what he's doing, that for an ageing Sheffield Wednesday team, that's one where the good luck trying to stop him, because that was just, there's no way you're going to catch him. And the only way you're going to catch him is if you foul him, which could then get you a yellow card, and it means you're limited for the rest of the game. So it wasn't a particularly great game for Sheffield Wednesday. I mean, we probably were one of the worst teams Sheff Wed could have played, really. But yes, that second goal just set the tone for the next 80 minutes. And basically for the majority of the game, it felt like a training session.
Did. The third goal also comes in the first half. Again, it's, you know, it's a penalty, of course. But again, it's the build-up to the goal that probably deserves a mention, because it's a good player on the right-hand side. Hume gets a ball into Burstow, and, you know, he hasn't set the world alight since he signed on loan, obviously, from Chelsea. Obviously, still yet to get a goal. And, you know, still, I think we're the top scorers in the league, and not one of the goals has actually come from any of our strikers yet this season. But it's his work that wins the penalty. He turns his man. I think it was Diaby. He kind of goes down, handful of his shirt, and brings Burstow down. You can argue it might have been a little bit soft, but in the grand scheme of things, at 2-0, with Sunderland dominating the game, I don't think it had any impact on the game whatsoever. And it's Clark that takes it and scores it. I think that's his seventh goal of the season, takes him up to...
I'm just trying to count in my head how many he scored, but I think you're right. I think it is seven.
Yeah, which obviously takes him up to being the top scorer in the league. Takes him up to being just two goals behind his tally for last season, which obviously had Premier League interest as a result of it. And he's got, what, 36 games left to go? 37 games left to go?
38 games. Oh, no, hang on. No, 37. Have we played nine games so far?
I think it's nine.
Yeah, so it would be 37, you're right.
37 games to go. So, you know, three more goals in them 37 games, and he's already beaten last year's tally in terms of goals. But, you know, I had this talk with a few people yesterday, and not just Sunderland fans, just football fans in general. But how much is Clark worth now? Because you look at, obviously, the bids that you were getting last season, and, you know, we turned down, I think it was 15 million in the end from Burnley. And that was after his first season in the Championship, like I say, nine goals. I can't remember how many assists he got, but, you know, that was his tally last year. He's improved massively this season from what was already a very good standard. You could, like, obviously, you look at some of the players that have been sold from this league in the summer. You've got, obviously, Lavia, you've got Caicedo, you've got, there's another big one that got sold. Who was
Alex Scott.
There was another one as well. I can't remember.
Can you remember from who?
I can't.
But can you remember who signed them?
I can't.
Okay, well, then that's a bit screwed, aren't they? I'm sure someone listening on Spotify will be able to tell us.
They will. But there's been a lot of players sold this season, and, you know, it's always, do you class them as Championship players being sold when they've just been relegated? I don't know. But in terms of players who have been playing in the Championship and could end up getting a move out of it, I don't think it's too far-fetched to be saying that Sunderland should probably be looking for a Championship record fee for Jack Clark if we were to sell him.
I actually agree with that. Well, the point that I kept making, and I made it on my own video on YouTube, and I've made it plenty of times, is if Alex Scott leaves Bristol City to go to Bournemouth, I think it was he went to, if he goes for 25 million, yes, that could be persuaded either way with add-ons, but if he goes for 25 million, and let's be honest, what have Bristol City done, with all due respect to them in the world, what have they done over the last few years? They've been probably mid-table, maybe pushing for top half. Jack Clark, I think, got, was it 20 goal contributions in all competitions last season for a team that ended up finishing in the top six, that finished in the playoffs. He's got an unbelievable talent. He's a young English forward, which, again, an English tax is a thing. Forwards cost more than midfielders. And after this season, he's got 2 years left on his contract left, I believe. And that might be without extra year's extension that we don't know about, because I wouldn't put it past Speakman to have put that into his contract. So with that in mind, I actually agree with you. I mean, in the summer, I said between 15 to 20 million, I think, is about right. And you look at Keane Lewis Potter a year before that left Hull to go to Brentford.
I think that is the benchmark.
Yeah, exactly. Keane Lewis
Potter, I think it's a very similar, obviously well, similar player, but he's not a similar player, because I think Clark is a much better player. But you look at the record that he had, I don't actually have the assist here, but I don't think he got too many based off I can see. Yeah. But you got 12 goals in a championship season, 13 goals in a League One season prior to that. I think it was 25 million he was sold for.
Something like that. I think it was around about probably maybe 20, but that might have gone up to 25 with add-ons, I'm not sure. But the point is, you're right. I think if he's going for that much, Clark, who, let's say, for example, if we don't go, for me, put it this way, for me, the only way that we keep Clark after this season is if we're in the Premier League. I think that's a pretty fair and obvious assumption. So if we don't go up this season, then I think fans will have to, as gutting as it'll be, accept that he's going to be gone in the summer. And fair play to the guy. If we don't go up this season and he's given us 2 years to crave a crack at going up to the Premier League and he wants to play in the Premier League, then that's totally fair enough. I'll have no grudges against him on that behalf, as long as he leaves in the right way and respectfully. But if you look at it, if you answer your question, what is Jack Clark worth now? What should we be getting? To be honest, if he continues the rate that he's going down at the minute, and we know he'll have a dip at some point, but if he gets, say, between 15 to 20 goals and gets a handful of assists, that's 2 years on the bounce that he's performed at championship level with another 2 years left on his contract. People might think I'm being deluded.
He's English and young.
Exactly. Adding that into it as well, between 25 to 30 million.
Yeah, I think 30 million is what you're looking at.
I think so. And anyone who scoffs at that, quite frankly, in my opinion, just ignores the market and ignores, well, no, sorry, like that's what the market is these days. I mean, I know Ollie Watkins is a striker, but if anything, this backs my point up even more. Didn't Ollie Watkins leave for a similar fee to when he went from Brentford to Villa? I'm sure he went for something like 30 million.
He was from Brentford, wasn't he? And I think it was a lot of money. Might have even been more than that. I think it was about 35, I think.
There you go then. I mean, and he's a striker, isn't he? He's now, as far as I'm aware, he's a striker. So he's someone who's getting goals as a striker. Jack Clark's getting goals as a winger. He's not a central forward. He's a winger. So in that sense, that should add more prices to it. That should add more to his price tag. For me, and the one thing I will give this regime, as much as they've deserved criticism before, the likes of Speakman, the likes of Harvey have recruited good players. But I'll tell you what now, we've got assets that could be worth a hell of a lot of money.
And I think the other thing that Sunderland have to be wary of, especially with players like Clark, especially with players like, you know, the likes of Serkan, I'm trying to think of other players that I know of, but I can't think of any others, but especially them two, they have sell-on clauses. And I think because of how low of a fee Sunderland actually ended up paying for Clark, which, you know, I don't think anyone still knows how much it is. There seems to be some people who think 7 million, some people think 3, some people I've seen talking about it was about 750,000. Whatever the fee is, what I do know is that Tottenham do have a substantial sell-on clause. So Sunderland have to take that into account as well when they sell them, that if we do sell them for, let's say, 20 million, we might only get 10 of that. And is 10 million enough to replace someone like Jack Clark? Obviously, you can take a risk and sign, you know, go to the Irish League and, you know, you might pick someone for 500k
It's not enough to get someone who's ready from the Championship, is it?
Yeah. So that'll be an interesting one, and I'm sure there's going to be, not even just in January, but in the summer as well, if Sunderland don't get promoted, or even if they do, is going to be a lot of teams interested in him. Probably better teams than Burnley as well.
I mean, as well, if you've got to look into it as well, even if we do go up, obviously, then there is still going to be interest, but our hand is much more, we've got a much stronger hand in trying to keep him, aren't we? Because then we can offer, we're in the Premier League, we're now back where the club belongs, and you're going to, the key then for me would be, what do we do with as far as his contract is concerned? Because then, do you then raise his wages significantly to match Premier League terms, which you could argue now he deserves? But again, as I said before, I that's a good point. I hadn't factored in the sell-on clause. So, all right then, and in which case, if he has another good season, 50. Then we should that would be all right, wouldn't it? In which case, around 30 is what you should be looking at, because, you know, if we didn't end up paying that much for Clark, then Tottenham are banking on the sell-on clause being the rest of that fee, aren't they? So, if that's the case, now for me with Clark, you've got to be looking for that. So, 25 to 30 million is the price we should be looking at. And again, I think anyone who scoffs at that, quite frankly, again, doesn't know the market these days. I don't see him going in. I could be wrong on this, but I don't see Sunderland selling him in January unless we get around 25 to 30 million. But for me, in January, I wouldn't entertain it. I think in January, if you're in it, especially if we're around the top six and win a promotion push, I just don't think it's worth doing. But as I said before, if we don't go up, he's gone in the summer, and fair play to the guy for it.
Yeah. In terms of the rest of the game, absolutely nothing. To be honest, it was like a training session, like you said right at the start. It was literally keep ball for Sunderland. 700 passes we made in that game compared to Sheffield Wednesday's something like 300, which shows pretty much just how the rest of that game went, not just the second half, but even the last stages of the first. It was literally just Sunderland keeping the ball, running down the clock, waiting for that final whistle to go. And eventually it did. 3-0 win, and it takes Sunderland up to fourth, I think it is still, because of results yesterday. I don't know if that can change based on the game between Blackburn
and
Leicester, which is 1-1 at the minute, actually.
Leicester, what's the score at the minute?
Can't. Blackburn are down at 15th, so it can't have any impact on it. The only impact it can have is how many points ahead Leicester can go at the top as it stands at this exact moment, because Leicester are drawing. Sunderland are 6 points from top. Obviously, Ipswich drew and Preston lost yesterday, which is good. But like I say, league position doesn't mean too much at this stage of the season. But standout player from that game, I think there's one obvious one, but you can decide which one it is.
Yeah, well, the obvious one, of course, is Anthony Patterson. What else can you say? Right, yeah, it's obviously Jack Clark. He's just a different level. I mean, I think I looked this up yesterday. I think he's joint top scorer with Adam Armstrong from Southampton. So, joint top scorer as a winger, and he's just a completely different level. He's easily one of the best players in the Championship. And if he doesn't get if he continues this up, he's got to be in Championship team of the season, absolutely hands down. But there's a long way to go for that yet. In terms of other players who stood out, I thought Huggins actually had a pretty solid game. I think Burstow, I think he got a great assist for Clark's first, and then I don't know if winning a penalty counts as an assist, but I don't think it does. But either way, he won the penalty that helped us go 3-0 up. I think with Burstow, as soon as he gets a goal, I think he will start to see some confidence from the lad. But yeah, I mean, there's the one player who's head and shoulders. I mean, Sunderland as a team were head and shoulders above Sheffield Wednesday anyway, and there's no one who had a less than average game, but at worst. But Clark's he's just too good, isn't he?
He is. And hopefully he can carry that form into Wednesday's game, which, like I said, is at home to Watford, the team that are struggling again. Probably going to have a new manager anytime soon again. I think the league table has them down in 20th at the moment. 9 points from 9 games, just 2 wins. Obviously, Sunderland being at home for this game creates a slightly different outlook. How Watford will play, I'm not too sure. You know, you'd think with the team at Watford, the players that they have and probably the ambitions that they have, they will probably want to go out and win the game. But, you know, I haven't seen too much of them this season, so I don't know. But again, similar to what would have been similar to the Cardiff game, what was similar to the Sheffield Wednesday game, is that the first goal is crucial once again.
Absolutely. And again, because if Watford get the first goal, then it invites them probably to sit back. I don't know whether that would be their intention, but if Sunderland get it, and of course, as I keep on saying, if we get the first goal, then we're probably one of the worst teams to go 1-0 down to, because you can throw everyone on forward, but then we've got the pace to quickly hit you on the break, and it could be 2 and 3 and out of sight. There obviously are going to be games where that doesn't happen, but on the whole, I think it's the fact that we are getting a lot more respect from teams now, and teams are sitting back against us. But as I've said before, with the Cardiff game, we have to find a way of breaking that sort of thing down. But for this game, I mean, if you look at Middlesbrough, we're able to put 3 past them. So I think it's one where we definitely have the quality to score a couple of goals. Watford are quite free scoring. They score a lot, but concede a lot. So I'm concerned with the fact that it is at home. And I think, like you said, it just depends on that first goal. It's going to be a tricky game. I can't remember the last time we beat Watford, actually, come to think of it. But, you know, but yeah, it's one where if you're wanting to be in the top six or pushing for the top two, you've got to be aiming to at least get something out of the game, if not win it.
Predictions for it?
I've always had a funny feeling about this game. I'm thinking of 2-2, similar to the 2 scores last season. I don't know why. I've just got a feeling Watford might turn up a little bit, and I think we might be caught short slightly. But I do think we have enough forward quality to at least get a point. But yeah, I'll go 2-2. And to be honest, although Watford and Borough are both down the bottom, I think 4 points at minimum. If we get 4 points out of these two home games, I wouldn't complain too much.
Yeah. We've beaten once in 18 years.
What, Watford?
Yeah.
Oh, hang on. Was that under David Moyes? I'm pretty sure it was when Patrick Van Aanholt got the winning goal.
I think it will have been December 2016. That would have been. We've played them 6 times since we... Well, 6 times in the last 18 years. The last win, obviously, in December 2016. Before that, it was 2005. Drew the last two games 2-2. Lost 1-0, won 1-0, drew 2-2, lost 1-0. So pretty similar scorelines in every game. But it's a different season. It's a different team. It's a different manager. It's a different everything. So what happens in that game is obviously yet to be seen.
Well, this is the thing. It depends how Watford's confidence is, doesn't it? It depends on how on the floor they are. But again, it's a cliche, but it's true. It's the championship. Anyone can literally beat anybody. So we've just got to make sure we're on our game. And when we get, because we will, one thing I'm certain of, we will get chances against them. So it's just a matter of how we, it's just a matter if we end up taking them or not.
Yeah. But I say that on Wednesday, we'll get a podcast out at some point before the weekend to talk about what happens during that game. I think Middlesbrough is the next home game after that.
Yeah, you are correct. I think. Next Saturday, 12:30.
Yeah. So we'll have a podcast out talking about Watford, hopefully before that Middlesbrough game. And then again, one after the Middlesbrough game as well. But until then, we'll see you there. That's all, folks.